I want to start by asking something. So, could I ask, let's have a show of hands, who here has, how to put it, who here has some engagement with a secular, what you could call the movement of secular mindfulness? Who would say they've got some engagement with that? Okay, so maybe a quarter of the people in the room?
Nearly half.
Yeah, there's a lot behind you. How about, who here is actually teaching secular mindfulness? All right, so the good smattering of people. And some of you I know are very experienced teachers. Richard Cate is teaching in Bangor, Naga Bodhi, we've trained, you know, over the years together. So there's actually quite a lot of us who already have quite a substantial engagement. And then others who don't. This is partly why I think what we need is more of a dialogue, because, you know, there's such different kinds of involvement with this topic. The other thing, though, is that... So let me start off just by asking, talking about secular mindfulness, and I'm going to come on to the second part of my talk, which is sacred mindfulness, later on. And with the question, why is this important for us? So, okay, a lot of us have actually found ourselves working in this field, this sphere, secular mindfulness. Now, what I'm not going to do now is...
So, can we have a definition?
You want a definition?
Yeah.
That's the thing I was going to...
Maybe I'm missing something.
All right. So, by secular mindfulness, what I mean is all of the ways in which mindfulness and meditation practices are being taught in secular contexts, where, in other words, they're explicitly stating that they are not religious, they are not Buddhist, they are being taught within contexts like the NHS, education, and so on. Or for doing what I do, mainly, which is to teach courses for the general public. It so happens that I teach my courses at the Cardiff Buddhist Centre, but I'm very clear that I'm teaching these things as in a secular way, not in a Buddhist way. So what those words actually mean is a moot point, and we'll come on to that, I think. I just want to start by... And what I'm going to be doing in this talk is touching on a lot of areas. So we can come back to all of these things when we come to the bit which is about questions. That's how I'd like to structure the talk. So let me just start. But to give you some idea of what's happening in this country, and this country is somewhat behind what's happening in the United States. So just a couple of weeks ago, I was at a meeting at the Houses of Parliament, or a meeting of the all-party parliamentary group devoted to mindfulness. I was talking about, the nature of that particular discussion was mindfulness in the criminal justice system. I've been working with, actually, through the good offices of Amitra, who's a senior part of probation, and the criminal justice system in Wales. I've been working with serious offenders, really serious offenders, who are just coming out of prison, and running mindfulness courses for them. And so there was a meeting for people who've been doing this sort of thing in prisons, with youth offenders, and so on. Really challenging work, by the way. So we talked about that. That was the meeting. After that, my friend Chris Cullen invited me to lead a meditation session for a group of MPs and Lords who've been doing the mindfulness courses he teaches in the Houses of Parliament. 120 people now have been through those courses or are currently doing a course with him. And it was fascinating to meet these people, who you think of as public figures, deeply, deeply affected by mindfulness, by finding meditation practices and an approach to managing their experience, to relating to their experience, that was so different from the generally frenetic, combative atmosphere of their normal daily lives. really deeply touched by it. And the so there are two separate projects in Parliament. One is the meditation for parliamentarians, and the other one is your party parliamentary group that will be having meetings on mindfulness in health, physical health, mental health, education, the workplace. And we'll be producing, I'm an associate of a group that's supporting the All-Party Parliamentary Group called the Mindfulness Initiative. We'll be producing a report, which I'm editing, called The Mindful Nation, which hopefully will offer a vision for how mindfulness practices, which come from a Buddhist background, can enter into British society on all levels. Through these public services, through instilling, developing a culture that supports these practices. One of the things we could talk about, and I'm not going to go into now, is why all of this is happening, but I simply want to make the point that it is happening. So yes, you look at the press, you look at the media, and there are lots and lots of things on mindfulness, and all of those articles start by saying, you don't seem to be able to open a newspaper without reading about mindfulness at the moment. So something is happening. And what's more, hopefully, what we see in this kind of wave of interest is actually just the start of something much bigger and much more substantial. So that's... something is happening in society as a whole. We clearly have reached a tipping point over the last couple of years, and you know, it's gone from something rather peripheral to something which is, you know, everyone seems to be talking about. I want to say something about what this means for the Buddhism in the West, just briefly, and what it means for us as a Buddhist movement. So for Buddhism in the West, there's no doubt in my mind, as someone who's been following these things quite closely, editing a magazine on Buddhism and the modern world, Dharma Life, for many years, that this is by far the biggest instance of an encounter between the Dharma and modern society, in 50 years. The only thing you can compare it to is the wave of interest in Buddhism in the 1960s. And I just want to make that point of comparison, because while we can be purist and maybe a little wary of secular mindfulness from the point of view of Buddhist practitioners, think back to how the established Buddhists regarded that wave of interest in the 1960s. You know, the hippies who are mixing up their interest in Buddhism with an interest in drugs and all politics and all that sort of thing. So there's nothing that we can really compare the wave of interest in mindfulness with apart from that. And so we need perhaps a degree of latitude. Look what happened what came out of the 1960s, the entire Buddhist world that we now have. For our movement, I think we can regard, well, partly for our movement, but partly also for Buddhism in general, we can regard the growth of secular mindfulness as a new kind of engagement with society. We've had the model of the new society, which has largely meant developing our own institutions, our own Buddhist world. And I absolutely don't want to set these two things against each other. Personally, I'm a very strong supporter of all of those new society type models. But as a way of influencing society, a way of bringing the Dharma into society at large, what we have with the secular mindfulness movement is a different model. You might not like it, but we need to take it seriously. It's a different model where, rather than building out, asking people to come into our world, we go into their world. And quite soon, it's no longer us Buddhists going into their world. We train people, who are in health, in education, to use these bits of Dharma, and in my view, very well-judged bits of Dharma, to transform, to affect their own parts of society. So it's a different model, and it's quite a challenging model for us. It means we can no longer own or control meditation or mindfulness. We can no longer say that they're exclusively Buddhist things, although we may have our own distinctive perspective on them. So what we're seeing is the development of a very powerful movement through our society that is fundamentally derived from Dharma practices. And Triratna, I'm very pleased to say, is quite a significant part of that. So I talked about my own involvement in this all-party parliamentary group. Well, Vidyamala will be there next week doing another of these roundtables. Kamala Gita will be talking about mindfulness in teacher training. Kulananda will be talking about mindfulness in the workplace, and perhaps others. So, you know, quite a lot of us are having quite a significant role within this. And we'll be hearing tomorrow from Sona about Breathworks. Breathworks, let me tell you, is a very highly respected part of the mindfulness world in this country. Well, we've got Rucha Raketu here, who's teaching in the Bangor Centre for Mindfulness Research and Practice, which is absolutely at the heart of all of this, along with several other order members. So you may or may not be aware of just how much Triratna involvement there is in this mindfulness movement. We don't own it, and it didn't come from our movement, so it raises all sorts of questions. Just want to touch on the question, is it Buddhism? Which is maybe what we're getting at with the question about secular mindfulness. Is it Buddhism? This is naturally the question that we ask. And the only answers that I can come up with are equivocal. No, it isn't Buddhism, because once it gets taken up within the NHS, for example, it becomes an NHS thing. They will use it in their own way for their own agendas, which is healthcare. So, no, it isn't Buddhism, and we absolutely mustn't regard this as a sort of a Trojan horse to convert the surreptitiously convert the world to the Dharma, to Buddhism, to our religion. But then again, yes, it is Buddhism, or yes, it is Buddha Dharma. Jon Kabat-Zinn argues for this quite strongly. And the reason is, well, I'll just give a few brief reasons. One reason is that the essential thing you're trying to communicate to people through these mindfulness courses, and I teach a lot of mindfulness courses and teach in a lot of different settings, the essential thing you're trying to communicate is also something that's quite central to the Dharma. It's that, first of all, you have a mind. There's this you have mental states, and this is a fundamental aspect of everyone's experience, which we take for granted, but which requires our attention. It gets people's attention when their minds stop working automatically and they get into states of anxiety, depression, stress, and so on. In other words, you take the car to the garage when it needs fixing. And then you realise it's got an engine. You don't have no idea how the thing works. So that is the Buddha's core insight, is it not? That all experiences proceed from mind, from mental states. And that therefore that our minds are conditioned. This is what we're communicating to people through secular mindfulness. Our minds, our mental states are conditioned. And that, in my view, is the essential insight of the Buddha, the essential basis, the founding basis of of the Dharma. That's what we're communicating, and it's a powerful message. And the other thing that I want to just mention, which I think is very important, which is often not quite understood by people who don't have direct experience of these secular mindfulness contexts. But it's not just about communicating a set of techniques. It's also not about stress reduction, really. It's about communicating a different way of living, a different way of being. And in order to do that, it's important that the mindfulness trainer embodies that different way of being and enacts it through their through how they teach. So, just as Bhante says, religion isn't taught, it's caught. That's absolutely the case for mindfulness. It is caught, not taught. And this is an issue once it gets out into schools and education with people who aren't so deeply steeped in mindfulness practice as some of us are. But that's really how it's conveyed. You know, it's the spirit of the thing that's important. So I just want to acknowledge then that secular mindfulness movement is challenging for us in Tri Ratna. It didn't originate in our movement. It originated in the what's called the Vipassana movement or the insight meditation movement primarily. And there are differences in approach to meditation. There are differences in some ways, certain differences in underlying philosophy, at least on the periphery of secular mindfulness. My view is that we should have some humility about this. If the guys down the street really have worked out something great, we should be learning from them. Mindfulness-based stress reduction has so much salience because of all of the different ways in which the Dharma has been adapted. It's struck a nerve. It's met people at the point of their greatest need and interest. It addresses people in their distress and their suffering, and it gives them dharmically inspired ways to relate differently to that distress. And that is what is motivating. Dukkha is the first noble truth, is it not? And that's mindfulness-based stress reduction is addressing the dukkha that seems to be so prevalent in the modern world, let's call it stress for short, in a very direct way. So that's why I think we really need to look at MBSR, mindfulness-based approaches, in terms of and consider why is it they're speaking so strongly and so directly to people. However, before coming to the however, I just want to say the other thing that I've personally learned and found really revelatory is the approach to teaching that's engaged with through MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction, and also mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, which is, as I said before, not a didactic approach, not even an interactive, teachery type approach. It's an approach of inquiry and embodiment. It's a very different way of engaging with being a Dharma, being a communicator, and one that I found really very challenging. And it's opened up an enormously greater vista about what it can mean for me to be communicating about the Dharma. Keeping this short, sacred mindfulness. So I'll say less about sacred mindfulness, but we might want to come back to it. So it's a resonant phrase, isn't it? Secular mindfulness and sacred mindfulness. In a sense, it says everything. What I mean by using that phrase, sacred mindfulness, what it means for me is a mind, and the implication is that this is something that extra that we have to offer. What it means for me is seeing mindfulness as an aspect of going for refuge. So going for refuge to the three jewels. So, and as Buddhists, we have a perspective on mindfulness that I don't think we should expect to see in secular contexts. But it's important that we don't conflate the two and we don't reduce the Dharma practice of mindfulness with the secular practice. So the extra element, I think we can think about in terms of going for refuge. So, talking about the Shantigarbhas, put it very clearly. So far as MBSR, etc., are concerned, with the Buddha jewel, the Buddha jewel isn't there with mindfulness-based stress reduction. And I think, as Buddhists, we need to be there reminding the mindfulness world that there's more to life than reducing stress. The Buddha's path you could call mindfulness-based dukkha cessation. What would the acronym be for that? But, you know, the Buddha's idea about how you eradicate dukkha, it does include all of the things that we teach on secular mindfulness, but of course there's more as well. And there's also, the goal isn't just stress reduction. When you cease dukkha, you become enlightened, which is rather considerably greater goal. So then I think that what we're teaching with secular mindfulness is the Dharma, but it's only one aspect of the Dharma. It's one part of the Dharma. And it's important for us as Dharma practitioners to recall and to continue to practice and embody the much greater range of Dharma practices that we have in Triratna, that we have in the Dharma in general. And Sangha is not a part of the mindfulness-based agenda. That, I think, is a limitation that, leaving aside Sangha, just thinking in terms of community and the communal aspect, that's something we have to address within the secular mindfulness world. We need to be building a culture of mindfulness that supports people beyond 8 weeks, because the whole of the mindfulness world is based on these 8-week courses. In fact, 8 weeks is the gold standard, and it gets watered down from there. But what can you do in any sphere of your life in 8 weeks? And if we're serious about helping people achieve the goals of, let's say, the health service in stopping people going back into depression or anxiety or stress, then they need to be able to sustain their practice. And of course, there needs to be a greater human dimension. Sangha means more than that within a Buddhist context. And actually, we have our sanghas to offer as well. I think, for me, Triratna has a very distinctive place within the world of Buddhism. What I see is aspects of the Buddhist world which are still tethered to the lineages of Asian tradition, which continuing with their traditions in the ways that they've been done, and often they're trying to adapt, and they are adapting, but they're tethered in some ways. And then there are the untethered parts of the tradition, which aren't prescribed by Asian precedents. Most of them are being drawn quite powerfully in this secularizing direction. And within Triratna, we exist somewhere in the middle. We have a secular agenda in the sense we've always been into Buddhist social engagement. And at the same time, we are in many ways are rooted in a sacred perspective, or a perspective of going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, in a way that doesn't feel at odds with the more secular approach. So, of course, that needs unpacking, but I'm keeping this short. And we have that's our place in the world of in the Buddhist spectrum, as I see it. And that's the balance that we need to maintain. That's what I think Bhante is trying to communicate through these recent papers, Bhante and Subhuti, how we can both be a modern movement and be a truly Buddhist movement. So there are many fears, I acknowledge that, and I think it's important that they're expressed and explored. Fears that the Dharma is being commercialized, secularized, appropriated, watered down by being turned into a stress reduction technique. I think we need to be talking about that. I also think that the mindfulness movement is a very exciting development, and that the mindfulness, the world of secular mindfulness, needs us. It needs us and people like us. It needs people for whom teaching meditation isn't simply a career or an aspect of a career or an aspect of a career that's informed by humanistic and liberal good wishes. The mindfulness movement needs people for whom meditation practice and mindfulness practice are a way of life and rooted in a much greater worldview. So, paradoxically, I think what I want to urge us to do is to engage wholeheartedly with this development, which is secular mindfulness, and at the same time, to take great care that we aren't simply drawn into that movement on its own terms. That's not what we need, and it's not what the secular mindfulness movement needs from us. The secular mindfulness movement needs us to be Buddhists who are practicing deeply, and on the basis of that practice, engage with it. So the world, not just the secular mindfulness movement, the world needs us to engage, and here is a vehicle that we can use to do it. And the world needs us, I believe, to also remain rooted in the sacred, in our own going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Thank you.